This morning is the last in the series of the seven last sayings of Jesus on the cross. We started out seven Sundays ago talking about Jesus saying, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And then we worked our way through the various other sayings until we get to John chapter 19, verse 30, where Jesus says, "It is finished." And each one of these seven sayings has inspired people. It has moved people to meditate on Jesus' passion, on Jesus' death. It has led people to understand in a greater way who Jesus really is for us and how we can have a relationship with Him. As I said, today is the final of the seven last words, "It is finished." About 10 years ago now, I guess, there was a movie called Signs, which starred Mel Gibson. It's a kind of movie that I wasn't really interested in watching, but I caught a little bit of it the other night on television, then I was really intrigued by it. It's a science fiction movie, and it's about an alien invasion, but that's not really what it's about. That's just sort of the context for the story. It's really about a preacher who has lost his faith. He's gone through a series of tragedies in his life, and he gives up being a preacher, and he has lost his faith. And the movie has, all throughout it, scenes that are reminiscent of the Christian faith. There's a Last Supper scene, for example. There is a resurrection scene. Even the title of the movie, Signs, that's what John, in John's Gospel, has, that's his name for the miracles that Jesus does in John's Gospel. He doesn't call them miracles, he calls them signs that point to the divinity of Jesus. They're called signs that point to the way Jesus goes. And one of the most frightening scenes in the movie Signs is not about aliens attacking, but it takes place in the context of the aliens attacking. The family has barricaded themselves in their basement because they can hear the aliens coming. They live in a cornfield. They can hear the aliens coming, and they've barricaded themselves in their basement for safety. And they can hear that the aliens have gotten into the house, and they can hear people walking around upstairs. And they are waiting in anticipation of the invasion, and they can't leave. Now, there's a son in the film, and he's about 10 years old, and he begins to have an asthma attack. But they've left his medication in their hurry to flee. They've left his medication upstairs. And Mel Gibson holds his 10-year-old son, and I found this scene absolutely terrifying as a father. He holds his son in his arms as the child's in very deep distress. And he just holds him and he says, "I need you to breathe with me. I need you to hold on to me and breathe deeply. Just relax. Relax. I need you to stay with me. Keep taking deep breaths. Breathe. When I breathe in, you breathe in." And the child's almost catatonic. He's almost out of it. And then Mel Gibson just takes these deep breaths, these really deep, deep breaths. And he says to his son, he says, "Just believe. Just believe." And what could have been a death moment in the movie and could have been another shattering tragedy for this family becomes a sign, a moment of miracle, a moment of faith. Just believe. And I think in many ways this scene kind of parallels the final saying of Jesus from the cross. When Jesus says, "It is finished," we could go either way. We could go towards tragedy or we can go towards hope. And in John's Gospel, John often lays things out there that have three meanings, four meanings, five meanings, six meanings. And "it is finished," just on the face of it, has a couple of meanings. And as I said, it could be tragic. It is finished. Just imagine the scene for a moment. This is the gray hill called Golgotha, which means place of the skull, because the rock formation on which the men were crucified looked somewhat like a skull. There were caves in it and pits in it so that it looked like a skull. And there are cries of the dying and moans of pain, and there are families who are being kept back from their loved ones by Roman soldiers, and they're looking over to see them and to watch them take their last breaths. And just imagine for a moment with me, if you will, being a disciple And you joined Jesus because you thought he was the Savior of the world. He proclaimed that he was the Christ, the Messiah, which in popular speech meant that he would be the king. And that you joined his little band of 12 because you thought that he was going to overthrow the Romans with a violent revolution, that he was going to kick the Romans out of all the cities and towns where they rule at the point of the spear. And you've been beside him when he has performed miracles. He's even raised Lazarus from the dead. This man has immense power. This man has immense capacity to be in God's very hands. And in the last moments on the cross, he says, "It is finished." So it could be a moment where the disciples really despaired. And I think it probably was. It was a moment where they bottomed out. Yet, as we say in John's gospel, John tells us things that mean more than what they seem to mean. "It is finished" can also mean that Jesus has met face to face with evil, whether it's human evil that we've created ourselves, such as torturing an innocent man on the cross, or otherwise. Jesus has come face to face with our sin and our guilt on the cross, and he believes, he knows that it is finished, that the fight is over, and that triumph is just around the corner. Without Jesus on the cross, his mission to free us from sin, both those we commit intentionally and those that others commit against us, without Jesus on the cross, his mission to eradicate sin fails. To look at it in another way, it's important for us to remember that even as we are preparing for Maundy Thursday and Good Friday and Easter Sunday, we live in a world that is very, very broken and not all that different from the broken world into which Jesus went. We can read in the headlines of the paper that right now, going on in Syria, there's a civil war going on, and in the past 2 years, 70,000 people have died. 70,000 people. Can you get your head around that in 2 years? The president of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, who has struck out against his own people who are rebelling. The president of Syria, who's in charge of the government forces, I don't know if you've done any reading into him, but I sort of never knew this about him until I did a little bit of research. He was trained in London in the United Kingdom. He was an eye doctor. He actually was a medical doctor in the military service to the very troops that are now being used to suppress and kill their own countrymen. The first lady, his wife, she's a computer scientist. She's a banker. Now, the point is that both of these people have top resumes. They have all the right diplomas on their wall. And if there is any sign of how deeply sin has infected our lives, this surely is it. You would never expect a well-trained and educated eye doctor and the first lady of Syria, a computer scientist, to be leading one of the most dictatorial regimes in the world today. So when we read back in Genesis chapter 2 about the fall, about Adam and Eve, it's not just about the talking snake. It's not just about disobeying God and eating the apple. It's how far we've fallen. Barbarism and hatred are not respecters of diploma. Sin enters into the loftiest of human hearts as well as the lowliest. And yet the cross threatens to uproot all the violence and expose it as it is. An understanding of the cross is all about coming face to face with evil, the evil that dwells in my heart and in yours, and knowing that violence and hatred and contempt and pride are all bankrupt and worthless in the face of Jesus Christ. Maybe I should put it another way. Think about this for a minute. Jesus was born in a village of Bethlehem. Bethlehem was about 300 people. It was not known for a whole lot until Jesus was born there. Most of the people in that day would have never heard of Bethlehem. He grew up in another small village called Nazareth, where he apprenticed in his father's carpenter shop. Jesus preached for a mere 3 years. And look at the variety of places he preached. He didn't have a settled pulpit of any sort. He preached in the desert, preached on the pass, on the hillsides, on the mountains, in a valley, in a friend's house. He never once, as far as we are told in the biblical witness, he never once preached in the temple in Jerusalem. Preaching in the temple would have been the goal of any preacher in that day, because that was making the big time. That was making the major leagues. That was hitting a home run with all the bases loaded. Most people who waved their palms on Palm Sunday probably hadn't met Jesus personally. A few surely did, but many more probably came just to check out what was going on and to see if the gossip around Jesus was true. Jesus had no place of honor. He had no ring of diamonds. He had no Italian leather shoes. He had no Sunday suit, no luxury automobile. He didn't have tenure. He didn't eat at five-star restaurants. He didn't call up politicians on speed dial. He had no guided tours of the Capitol. Jesus possessed no business cards. In other words, Jesus in his human life has way more in common with an illiterate peasant in the Middle East than he does with me, with all my relative wealth and privilege and health. And it was this very real flesh and blood human being, Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified and suffered from tremendous collapse and torture. It is finished. When Jesus says that, it means that his life of discomfort, his life of lack and privation, his life in the midst of loss and sickness is finished. And not in a pie in the sky kind of way, but rather in a suffering kind of way. That Jesus on the cross is beside the suffering and with the suffering. Jesus today still sits with the blind. Jesus today still cures those who cannot walk. Jesus today is still worshiped and glorified. People still touch the hem of his garment and call out to him for healing. And it is finished means that oppression is ending. It is finished means that sickness is ending. It is finished means that poverty is ending and war is ending and death is ending and tears are ending, because the Lord is going to set it all right. And that the Lord has put his lot in with the homeless and the criminals and the undesirable and the dying in order to put to death homelessness and criminality and death itself. The very Son of God, who was witness to creation, is put on the cross and ignored and spat upon and tortured by his own creation. And Jesus didn't need to do that. Yet he does it so that he can finish his work. Jesus shows us by hanging on the cross that humility is the value of the kingdom, that forgiveness is the value of the kingdom, that nonviolence is value of the kingdom. He submits in solidarity with the dying and the poor and the lost and the lame, those who've served valiantly. Jesus submits in solidarity with those on ventilators in hospital rooms, or the woman so depressed that she can't get up out of bed in the morning. What is finished on the cross is that the greatest tragedy that could await the world is to kill God. And it's already happened on a hill in outside of Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. Yet, just like the movie Signs, Jesus tells us to breathe in and to breathe out. That we can feel, when he's on the cross, we can feel Jesus taking his last breaths. And Jesus says to us, believe. Believe. Amen.